Take me where the promises are real.
Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Julie, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers meeting on NavaZoom, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our NavaZoom room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear tonight's speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. All right, well, so I'm very glad that I came on a few minutes early and was asked to chair this meeting because I came on specifically because of the speaker. And I was thinking about, I think I met her, I must have been at the women's meeting at 5:45. Maybe we met somewhere else, but that's where I remember cognitively remembering her. And I'm very impressed with her sobriety, with her commitment to the program. And, you know, I know I'm a part of her network, and I'm honored by that. And she uses her network, which is really impressive. It's something a lot of us, you know, don't always do, have the numbers but don't call them. I just am looking forward to hearing the rest of her story. And with that, I will give you Vanessa.
Hi, I'm Vanessa. I'm an alcoholic. Can you guys hear me okay?
Good.
All right. So I'm really very excited to be here. I don't really get a lot of opportunities to do service work. I'm the mother of two small children, and of course we're all in the middle of, you know, pandemic, and so it's a little isolating these days. And so I'm thrilled to be able to be with you guys and to share my story. And I'm really thankful to Paul O, who asked me to do this, and for Tim and your service, and Julie, your service too. I know I see your face often chairing these meetings, and I really appreciate that you guys step up and do these things. Otherwise, it wouldn't happen. So my sobriety date is November 1st, 2009. My personal adventures before and after getting sober. So I came from an alcoholic home. We are drenched in alcohol. You know, wouldn't have it any other way. That just is my experience. It's what I know. You know, we are that group of jolly folk who, you know, love our drink and have a good time and are boisterous. And, you know, at times very out of control. And I wasn't really the one that a lot of people thought would follow down that path. Surprisingly, a lot of, you know, I really did shock a lot of people when I, you know, came to sobriety, including myself. I didn't think this would be part of my path. I know a lot of people stand up here, tell their stories, and, you know, are you know, saying I was alcoholic through and through. I knew I was going to have, you know, crazy things happen in my life like this. I did not. So I always looked at my dad, the active alcoholic in my life, and his choices and his experiences were very different than mine. I saw a brother who went through rehab. And my mom, you know, was a fairly regular drinker in that she would have a glass of wine with dinner every night. So alcohol was around all the time. And, I would consider, that I was late to the game. Although, you know, gosh, we have so many different experiences. But I hear so many people saying, you know, I drank when I was 9, I drank when I was 13, you know, no, I drank, my first drink was when I was 17. And the experience was magical. I'm not going to lie. It was great. It was everything that I had hoped it would be. It was getting independent. It was a step into, you know, the adult life, doing, you know, making my own decision about what I was going to do. I went to this party. My best friend's older sister was having a big party at her condo, and I consumed a large amount of alcohol. And I remember going into the bathroom, looking at myself in the mirror, clicking my teeth, realizing I couldn't feel my teeth, and thinking it was the coolest thing ever. And just laughing, just like complete joy, like sheer joy. And it was just off to the races. And by off to the races, it was like racehorse, you know, drinking insane amounts, but not, I should say, you know, all the time. I was cautious, you know, I was very, calculated about it, but it was my little secret friend in my pocket, you know. It was me and alcohol, you know, my special relationship. And so I went off to college, and I went to a school where drinking was highly, highly, highly coveted and recommended, and you must do it. And that's what I did. I loved it. I consumed lots of alcohol. I had, you know, great friends. Everybody did it. And I went to lots of, you know, social events. I went into a sorority. I made really wonderful friends. I was inducted into a drinking society. We had those in school. And those were something that, you know, if you were nominated to be in a drinking society, it was a big deal. And I was like, this is me. You know, it was my identity. It was a great thing, and I could hold my own. And then I went off abroad, and that was a whole other chapter as well of, you know, stepping into the adult shoes, making my own decisions, adventure. And culturally, like being able to go to different countries and, you know, enjoy, like, you know, beer and wine. And of course, like in the tastings, you're like, you know, if you go and you really want to get into that wine, you do a little taste and spit out the rest. And it was like, no, we'll just, you know, we'll just drink it. It's cool. I like it all. And, but that was, I loved it. I mean, I romanticized it. I really did. It was a coming of age, you know, for me kind of story. And it was a romantic kind of thing that I got that opportunity to go and have those different experiences with, you know, with drinking, with my alcohol drinking buddy, my alcohol buddy. So, I graduated from college and moved to Atlanta in 2000. And being an adult, really settled in, having to pay rent and to pay bills and get a job, all that kind of stuff was neatly laid out. As well as it could be. I knew what I had to do after college. The partying was not over. However, I feel like there was a big difference between some of my friends who were taking more of the trip or the direction of being a lot more serious about career. And I'm saying over a 10-year period, like, you know, people, I saw people moving forward quickly, both in their careers and also in the direction that they wanted to take their lives, whether, you know, they were getting married, what they were doing, taking their lives seriously. And I felt like at some point, I was not easily able to transition into those that direction. I was having a hard time doing my dishes. You know, like everyone was, it just seemed like everything was, everybody else had it together. And I would always seem to have, you know, some sort of drama, something wasn't working out, boo hoo. And what I, you know, obviously learned later getting sober is that, you know, I was completely self-absorbed and had, you know, an alcohol problem, but I didn't know it then. You know, I struggled through my 20s, just constantly thinking, you know, gosh, I have all of these anxieties and depression, which were also, I was also diagnosed with along the way in my 20s. And so all this time I thought that's what it was. And I had a really smart therapist who I'd seen off and on for a couple of years. And she would watch me go through with it, through these alcoholic troubles. I would share it with her, you know, along with all of the other things that were happening with me. I would, you know, just kind of casually throw in those like, oh, and they should mention to you that I passed out and blacked out of my car, or that I couldn't find my car, or that I, you know, something. And she's like, okay. And, but she started putting two and two together, and I would share more and more with her every therapy session about, you know, what was happening and how, I would notice that I was trying really hard to control my drinking. Like that was a really big part, I would say, of my 20s, was that I would bottom out, some horrible stuff would happen, and then I would put together this calculated plan of, okay, I'm not gonna drink that much this time, so therefore I will not do A, B, C, D. I will not have hard liquor in my house. I will not go drinking tequila on Friday nights. This is what I want, you know. And so I'd set up these hard and fast rules, and it just got to be, you know, I noticed that, like, why am I doing that? Why am I, like, working so hard not to drink? And along the way, you know, spare you the drunkalog details, like the incomprehensible demoralization was happening all along the way. All along, you know, what we call the bottoms, you know, where you wake up and you're just like, I can't believe that I did that. And what I thought was so fascinating was that I would say, you know, when I woke up or when I came to you, you know, I'm not going to do that again. It's so dangerous. I'm never going to do that again. And then weeks later, I would. And it didn't really occur to me for a very long time, years, you know, upon years, that, like, until I had someone that I sat down with, like a friend of mine, and I had told her one night one of my really scary situations that I'd gotten myself into. And I remember her listening to me, and she started crying, and I was like, why are you crying? You know, I was like, are you okay? Like, what happened? Did I say something? She was just like, this is so scary. Like, she was like, I'm so scared for you, and my heart hurts for you. And I remember feeling like the most shame, and like almost like it just dawned on me that that was the situation. And that was really telling, that I had no idea how dangerous a game I was playing. You know, just all kinds of, you know, blackouts, strange bedfellows, bad choices, all the time. And I didn't, you know, this is the cunning and baffling part, for me, you know, and again, I'm picking out these sayings that we have that I, you know, in the literature, because the literature really, really spoke to me in the beginning and still continues to, but like, I had no consequences to, you know, to say, I have no real consequences. Like I, would go off and I would do these things, the incomprehensible, the memorializations, and all of that dark, you know, stuff. And I would not lose jobs. I would, you know, no institutions, no DUIs, no pregnancies, no prison, no, none of that happened to me. But at the same time, you know, I was slowly sinking into isolation. And, you know, I felt like I was losing the power of choice, that I was imprisoned by this, habit. It just was a habit. Like I would push alcohol away for weeks at a time and then suddenly, you know, dive so deep that I would feel, you know, I would feel myself like I was in a dark hole. And we know as alcoholics that dark hole, you know, can be death for us, whether it's by your own hand because you're so dark and alone that you take your own life, or whether you drink yourself so badly, you end up in a hospital, or you get in a car accident, you drink yourself to death. And I was getting there. And so I, called my dad after a really bad, blackout, and because my dad was the only one I thought would really get it. And this is the unrecovered alcoholic. And my dad was like, wow. Okay. And so I was looking for him to tell me something, and he was like, all right, well, listen, if you want to go to the hospital, if you want to go to a rehab facility, he's like, I'll support you. You know, that's a good choice, and you can do that. And your brother did that. And then I was like, no, I think I'm okay. You know, I think that what I'll do is I'll try AA. That's what my therapist has suggested. You know, why don't that therapist that I've been going to all this time had said, hey, why don't you go try AA? You can go and you can speak with other people about this. And so I looked up AA online, and I went to Galano over by Piedmont Park, and I pulled into the clubhouse, and of course, you know, terrified. And I walk in, and it's mostly a room full of gay guys, and they look like they're having so much fun, and they all know each other. And I was like, okay, I'm clearly in a this is not the right place. And they were like, oh, sweetie, sit down. You're totally fine. Sit down. You look bewildered. You know, you're in the right place. And a woman came over and said, you know, you're new. Here's a big book, and it's yours. And she said, don't skip the doctor's opinion. And I said, okay. And so I just sat there, and that's when I heard my story, and that's when I heard so many moments of truth. You know, that's me. Check. Check, check. I did that. Yes, check. Oh, wow. I did that too. Although I got to one place in the book where it said complete abstinence. And I was like, yeah, that's debatable, right? Like, really? Sure. And because I just didn't want that to be the truth. You know, I was like, surely we don't have to stop drinking altogether. Like, I can just pull myself together. So I started going to meetings, and I was told by, you know, I befriended people at meetings, and I listened. I tried to hear what everybody had to say. The people that I kept seeing time and time again, the regular faces, I would listen to what those people told me to do. And they said, find a home group. And they said, get a sponsor. And they said, stick with the winners. And they said, and you know, you read all of the slogans on the walls. And you had the, you know, the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, you know, read every time at a meeting. And so I started really soaking in all of the culture, you know, of AA. And I'm glad that I did, because if I didn't, you know, and I see people do this all the time, if I didn't, you know, really immerse myself in that culture, it wouldn't have stuck, you know. I wouldn't still be here if I didn't, you know, really want to give it a chance, because I was scared. I was really scared. It was me and the darkness, and I, you know, there was no manual as to how I could fix myself, but you guys were, you know, when I walked in, you guys did have the manual. You did have the instructions, and that's what I was just like, all right, well, I'm sticking to y'all. And so the literature has been a really big deal. I am still going to literature meetings. Anytime I get into a really bad spot, that is what I go to. I go to daily readers a lot because it's simple, stupid. So keep it simple, stupid. That's it. I do those daily readers. And then recently I've started going to a small meeting where we're picking up some of the older literature. So, you know, the big book has already always been something I'm constantly, you know, looking at and reading. But I started reading Dr. Bob and the Oldtimers. And then I'm reading now Experience, Strength, and Hope, which are the AA stories from the big book that have not been taken out. And so I was a history major in college, and now I'm a history snob of AA. And I love that stuff. I love it because, take it all the way back to two men, struggling and who realize, you know, if we do this together, you know, we can relate to each other, speak the same language, understand and help each other get out of the dark, you know, the darkness. And I've just been so fascinated with how all of this AA and, you know, Al-Anon, how that spun off to how it all came about with these. So I've always really, the literature has always been a big touchstone for me. And the alcoholic bond, you know, I just said something about Bill and Bob, having found each other and had such an incredible relationship together, both just as individual alcoholics, but also, you know, building this society, you know, this wonderful thing, you know, called AA. And it, from the ground up, and it happens, you know, it happened with me, with my first sponsor. It happened, to me, with my second sponsor that, really, really had a hold on me that really made me fall in love with AA and everything that it had done for her. And having a relationship with her, you don't know people from Adam, but you trust each other because you've been to that place and you know what alcohol can do. It's like no other relationship that I've seen before. And it is amazing, you know, to travel, to go to different meetings, to walk into, you know, a meeting of AA and to know that you're home is such a, it's such a strange concept, but that's the way I feel. Is that I can sit down. I don't care who you are. I mean, you could have gone to prison for 20 years for God knows what. If I know you're an alcoholic, I will sit down with you and I will say, I am in dire straits. I don't care who you are. I'm in dire straits. Here's the deal. I will bare my soul to you and we'll work it out. You know, like, I mean, that's my understanding. And that's how I feel when I walk into a meeting. I trust, which is an amazing thing, to trust alcoholics, but we do. And I was really surprised when I started working with the sponsor. I guess, you know, one of the big things that I would take away from doing the step work, because that was such a great experience. I mean, I haven't done steps quite some time, but having gone through the steps with a sponsor, you know, one of the biggest things, two big things that I think have come out of that was realizing how self-absorbed a creature I was, both when I was drinking, of course, but after too, coming to terms, you know, when you get sober, knowing that you're always going to be an alcoholic, that's not going to go away. But that being that kind of creature means you really do somehow come back to yourself naturally. think about yourself. And it, it really, shook me to know it, to understand it. Because I don't know, I, going through the steps, I was like, I don't see how I could be so incredibly selfish. I mean, I had to really, it had to be explained to me, you know, what that looks like. And the steps revealed it in so many different ways, how our minds think without, you know, going into too many, you know, details. You guys know how, step work goes, but, just those deep dives, you know, doing step four and realizing, how responsible you really are in a lot of, you know, bad things that have happened in your life. And realizing, you know, how often, you know, alcoholics, can go, you know, can really take a victim route or really feel like, you know, the world is against them. It took me a long time to accept that. I didn't want to be that person, but I realized it having gone through the steps and seen the error of my ways. And the other really big thing in the step work is, God, knowing that God is there, is always there. And that, as I began to go through a lot of what we consider that being the promises, after we get sober and all these wonderful, you know, life starts to happen, having to go through hardships as a sober person, having to go through things that people go through in life, regardless if you're an alcoholic or not. At the end of the day, you know, gosh, I have my family, I have my AA family. But then at the end of the day, when all of that, you know, is peeled away, what I have is me and God. That is, you know, what I've recognized as, you know, someone who's been able to get sober, you know, have a great career as a, you know, productive member of society, have a marriage, a functional marriage, bring two kids into the world, buy a house, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, that's hard stuff. It's all really cool, like first world problem, you know, problem kind of stuff, you know, when things go wrong. But at the end of the day, it's me and God. And that has been something in early sobriety that I didn't really know. Like, I just went on what I could, like what you guys told me to do. And I pray, sponsor told me to pray all the time, you know, okay, pray. But it's not like I didn't mean it. I felt like I wasn't responsible enough to know and to really feel in my gut that God is listening and God is there and God has a hand in what is taking place in my life. And being, of an emotional, sober mind that I can hear God, and I can see that the suffering that I'm going through, you know, with these life problems, big girl problems, is, God's there. And with the suffering comes the growth. And that's been, I guess, you know, recently in the last 5 years of my life, when all of these really great things have been happening, you know, that's been the big breakthrough. And it's something that I prayed for, you know, when I was like 5 years sober, because I knew I didn't have it yet. You know, I'd been through the first several years of sobriety where, you know, I struggled the first couple of years, like, do I really need to be here? I don't know. And then, you know, yes, I can be here, but there's the hole in my sobriety. I'm going to meetings, and maybe I'm doing the step work, but all of the faith, you know, the faith in a higher power just wasn't there. And so that's recently come about, I would say, in the last, you know, several, you know, three or four years. And it's been wonderful. And I've really quite frankly needed it. I mean, God, you guys have heard me say, and, you know, in meetings, 2020 has been a dumpster fire. Like, I love that description. It's just a dumpster fire for a lot of people. But at the same time, you know, I've looked and I've seen a lot of beautiful things that have happened. Sobriety, you know, being one of them, bringing children into the world, a home life, you know, being at home and being isolated, I would never have been able to do that, you know, in early sobriety or drinking, you know, at all. I didn't do anything like that. I was off drinking and having a good time. I wasn't in the same place very long. Now I can sit and be at peace. That's an amazing thing for some, for a drinker. This drinker didn't like to sit still. I didn't like to sit around and think about things much. Because I'd go to dark places or I'd, you know, not want to deal with it. And now I can, I've had serenity. I always hated that word. I've said that in meetings a lot, serenity. Just thought that was such a ridiculous word. And now it's a wonderful thing. It's an absolutely wonderful thing. I will say the cravings are still there, man. Darn it. They really are. Like I watch a lot of people, in meetings and maybe when they're telling their stories say that, yeah, I haven't thought about a drink in forever. And I can say that. I can totally say that. Like today, yesterday, a week ago, whatever, I haven't thought about drinking. But I'll tell you that when you put me in certain situations, I do. I still really, really think about drinking and absolutely love and miss it terribly. But what I know is that I have, you know, what you guys told me, I have that disease. And I, you know, in Dr. Bob's nightmare, I love how he, you know, how he puts it that, you know, we are, you know, we are people that have, you know, a problem and that, you know, we can go out and, you know, drink if you want to, but, it's, you know, to drink is to die. It's not, you know, it's just not a good idea. And I spent all of my, tokens, like I'm out, you know, that's what he initially said was, you know, I did all of that and I've run out of my chances, because I'm just not like everyone else. I can't leave that glass on the table. And I tried that experiment so many times, you know. Just leave it there. Just leave it on the table. And I couldn't. And, you know, and I know from a lot of people who have tried it that I would not be able to pick it up if I went back. And I'm trying to think of anything else I have to say. I am grateful for where I'm at now. I know, you know, I said pandemic. It's very... times are weird, but when all this kind of this pandemic started to come down, to go down, in March and April, I got really nervous because I lost a sponsor. She and I didn't work out, and she said she couldn't work with me, and I was like, what? I was terrified. And so I found I'm really happy because a new chapter in my life started because I called up someone that I knew from a long time ago, and I said, here's my experience of what just happened to me with the sponsor. I'm really sad, and what should I do? And I ended up asking her to be my sponsor, and it's worked out wonderfully. And because of that, I have this new network of women that I used to run with when I got sober earlier. So I'm still really plugged in, and you know, I have this new meeting that I go to where we're, you know, reading these stories from, you know, a while back from, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And they sound the same. You know, these stories, you know, sound the same. And I'm very much still plugged in, you know, regardless of where we're at right now with pandemic. I know we all, most of us, I think, had a lot of fear about what was going to happen when all of this went down. And, you know, I know just having looked from March until now that I still very much believe in what I'm doing because I knew that I needed to take those steps to reinvent how I was going to live, you know, alcoholically through this pandemic. And I'm lucky because I have an alcoholic husband who's in recovery. So he's here with me. Worst comes to worst, we sit down and have a meeting, and point fingers at each other. You know, I have a plan. Regardless of where I'm at, I go, you know, to virtual meetings and, I call, you know, my network of women. I don't call them as often as I should, but when the shit hits the fan, pardon my French, I have to call. and talk to them. I've got my foot in the door, or I should really say I'm in bed. I'm in bed with AA, which is great. You know, it's still very much working in my life, and it's given me everything that I have right now. Everything. I'm so grateful, and thank you guys for letting me share my story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Vanessa. That was just so amazing. I don't know if you saw my face the whole time. It was like you literally just told my story. I mean, right down to the weird exact detail. I was like slapping the desk going, oh my God, this is my story. So I feel like a kindred spirit again with you. And I felt like maybe I would. And I'm really glad I came to hear your story tonight.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Vanessa. That was a great story.
Thanks, Vanessa. Awesome.
Thank you, Vanessa. That was awesome.
Thank you, Vanessa.
Great job, Vanessa.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vanessa. I love how you kept always going back to it ends up with just being God and me.
Absolutely. Thank y'all.
Thank you both.
For everything. Y'all have a good night. Thank you, Vanessa.
Thank you, Vanessa.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you at a
first I slip and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me and finally wake and there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart. Promises are real. And I always long for something that set me free. Promises are real.